January is when we recommit to the habits that support our health and well-being. And naturally, we start looking at what can support those goals, including supplements. But choosing the right supplements can be confusing, because not only are there so many brands out there, the supplement industry itself is a low-trust category. It's lightly regulated, products are easy to make, and companies don't even have to list everything on their label. Now, there's Momentous. They've become the high-trust brand in a low-trust category. They weren't satisfied with the industry standard, so they built the Momentous Standard, their commitment to doing things the right way, not the easy way. Momentous sources the highest quality ingredients on the planet. Their whey protein comes from grass-fed European dairy cows. Their creatine uses the purest form of creatine monohydrate, and every formula is made with clinically backed, highly bioavailable nutrients, with no fillers and no artificial sweeteners. Right now, Momentous is offering listeners up to 35% off your first order with promo code AudioBoom. Head to livemomentous.com and use promo code AudioBoom for up to 35% off your first order. That's livemomentous.com, promo code AudioBoom.
Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.
It's that time on the radio where we listen to Bill Blevins from Blevins Franks. How are you doing today, Bill?
Hi, Howard. I'm very well indeed. Thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, considering good. What's going on. Mm. What's caught your eye over the past 7 days?
Well, I'm still impressed, Howard, with the seemingly slow but I think meaningful progress in the negotiations between the UK and the European Union to try and get us to the 31st of December, or at least by the end of November, to have a deal that we can call a deal that means something. And of course, the challenge this week to ignore the US election has been tempting, but you can't ignore the massive newsworthy issues that have taken place during the run-up to the election and indeed on the election day and immediately following the election day. I mean, we have to wait and see for the longer term quite how this is all going to pan out, but I'm pretty sure that things will settle down very quickly.
Yeah, let's hope so. Okay, then, let's have a look at our topic today. We're looking at investment performance and outlook. So, Bill, 2020 has been a challenging year for everyone, and it's been a unique year for stock markets too. We saw the sharp market sell-off in the first quarter, followed by a rebound in the second quarter. How did the third quarter go?
Frankly, not so well as one might have expected, but when you consider all of the various elements within the consideration of the markets, it was a pretty dull period, the third quarter. We had a pretty sensible fight back when the first lockdown was in place during March and April. Did pretty well through the summer, but the third quarter, for the first time since March, September showed a negative month in the markets. The US has been the best region overall this year, but even the US suffered a setback. It isn't really surprising with the then impending US election affecting not just the US, but markets in around the world who trade in US dollars, including companies in the UK who have large volumes of their trading carried out in dollars. And of course, within the UK and Europe, we still have the overhang of the indecision, even though there is increasing likelihood of a deal, re-Brexit. That Brexit overhang has also laid itself heavily on the markets. You'll remember at the beginning of the third quarter, there was so much talk about it ending in a no deal. And we have moved forward since then to the point at which most economists are forecasting that there is only about a 30-35% chance of it ending in no deal. There now seems to be a willingness on both sides to compromise.
Were there any particular countries or sectors that performed well?
It's been a very strange period, Howard. The best performing market, international stock market this year, has been the S&P 500 in America. As we stand at the moment, it's actually in positive territory from its point of start at the beginning of the year. That is nothing short of a remarkable achievement, except that that market performance has been driven essentially by the value of the largest technology companies that all are listed on the US Stock Exchange. If you look at Google, Amazon, Facebook, Netflix, Apple, they have unbelievably rocketed in growth over this year. And for many reasons, not least of all, that during a period of incarceration by virtue of lockdowns and the rest of it, businesses like Google and Amazon Online Trading, the social network of Facebook, the staying-at-home opportunity on Netflix, Apple bringing out new stock phones and watches during that period have led to an exponential increase in their share price. In fact, if you took the those top five stocks of Google, Amazon, Facebook, Netflix and Apple out of the S&P 500, the S&P 500, the other 495 companies in the S&P 500 would actually be showing a 10% loss over the year. It is those large technology companies that have extremely exaggerated the performance of the market. And so that has really helped the US market. The UK FTSE All Share Index still down around 18-20% on the year, but a distinct recovery, as I say, in the first, second quarter, but with a very quiet period with the Brexit uncertainty during the third quarter. So a mixed bag, if you like. And I think we will find that once there is a Brexit deal, once the US has sort of settled down and the dust of the past 18 months or so of rhetoric has drifted away into the past, I think those markets are showing the potential. The valuations now are reasonable, and so I think there are plenty of opportunities in the markets to, with a rifle shot approach, to pick up stocks and items of value that might otherwise not have been available without the decline in the third quarter. So looking forward, I think there's every intention on the part of investors to continue to invest, and I think that will inflate growth markets over the next quarter.
I think it's interesting, those five big companies that you, the tech companies that you've mentioned, because one questions on another chat perhaps talking about monopolies, the pros and the cons of monopolies. Anyway, back.
Well, I think, you know, I think, Howard, we're going to find, you know, the dominance of those five companies. I mean, when you look at Apple, the market value of Apple is greater than all of the shares in issue in the FTSE All Share Index. It is outrageously colossal, massive amounts of cash on their balance sheet. And I suspect, however you look at this, there is going to be an increase in the regulation of those large technology companies and their dominance in the market, as you say, not simply because they're a monopoly, but because their exponential growth is distorting the overall performance of the US market.
Yeah. Although I understand that Apple is no longer the best-selling phones, they've been overtaken by Samsung, I saw recently.
When you look at the stock price, it's increased by 400% in a couple of years.
Wow. Anyway, let's look back at home, Bill. How did the UK markets perform?
Initially, the markets in the UK early on in the year took a significant dive. They had, back into March, early part of April, a very substantial bounce back. I mean, the market bounced back by 10% in one day. If ever there was an argument, Howard, for time versus timing, we've always said in these discussions between us that it's time in the markets and not timing that makes the money. Had you run for cover at the beginning of the pandemic and thought that the market's going to fall away and tried to catch the point at which the markets then bounced up again unexpectedly, I have to say, the first day of recovery led to a 10% increase in stock prices, and the vast majority of people who came out of the markets would have missed that 10%, which is often the core of the next few weeks of recovery. So again, it's about timing the markets, not timing. UK market's still down by, as I say, 18-20%. But I think there is great value in the UK market, and I think we will see progress in the FTSE All Share Index over the next 12 months or so.
What about fixed income? How did their performance compare to equities this year?
I think bonds and fixed income investments of quality have had, frankly, a reasonably good performance since the middle part of 2018. In the first quarter of this year, UK gilts, returns, fixed income still performing well. And whilst the FTSE All Share Index dropped in total by between 25 and 30%, frankly, the variation in the bond prices averaged out at around a difference of 5%, just 20% of the fall in the equity market, which reflects the security of bonds. It's been a very good time for people who are invested in fixed interest securities, whether they're high quality corporate bonds or whether they're government bonds, given that, the volatility of those investments is far lower than the equity stock in the businesses, which often issue bonds to investors. I mean, there is, as I say, an inclination now to consider safety within bonds and fixed interest securities. But don't lose sight of the fact that in the present moment, with stock prices down and market values down, that is, in an investor's sense, an investment opportunity, because the stocks are now cheaper than they were in the UK market, for example, a year ago.
Well, Bill, do bonds play an important role in a portfolio?
I think they play the role of having a partially defensive strategy within a portfolio at almost all times through an investment cycle. The art of getting your portfolio right, and by right I mean at a level of investment growth which is respectable and which is satisfactory for your client, and indeed on top of that, at a point at which you can guarantee that there's going to be very little risk to your portfolio in that section, which is invested in things like US Treasuries, gilts, euro bonds, simply because they're guaranteed by government. And over a period of time, whilst the yields have been down because of low interest rates, they offer a kind of a tamp on the brakes to the accelerator, which you might be pressing through your equity portfolio. It's usually conventional for most investors to have an element of their investment based in fixed interest securities, just to make sure, like you do in the car, you have your accelerator pressing you forward with equities, but you've always got your foot hovering around the brake just in case risks get too great with the speed you're travelling at. So that analogy might not sound too sensible, but it does mean that you should have a portfolio which holds bonds, and especially valuable at a time when the markets are so volatile.
Yeah. Well, Bill, how do you see the investment landscape in the short to medium term?
I think you know, the current economic cycle is frankly quite supportive. That sounds crazy, I think, to some people when you look at the UK market down by 18-20% and the US market only their top five shares really showing the market lead, with 495 of them showing a 10% decline in the S&P 500 if you take those five stocks out. But that all means that in those 495 stocks and in the FTSE All Share Index in the UK and in the euro markets, because of the decline in prices, for all the reasons I've given, Brexit, COVID, US elections, all of those things have affected markets and they have tipped downwards. What does that mean? That means it's sale time. That means prices in the markets are now lower than they were, generally speaking, apart from those big five tech companies. Prices in the markets are, generally speaking, lower than they were 9, 10, 11, 12 months ago. And so, therefore, from an investment perspective, this is an appropriate time to be considering how you should now balance your portfolio going forward. I mean, we've got to remember that we're still looking at the impact of Brexit. That isn't resolved yet. We've still got to remember that the the COVID issue has definitely not gone away. In fact, it looks significantly more difficult now than it did 6 or 7 months ago, with additional lockdowns and all that goes with it. And that is bound to affect markets in the short term. But there is going to come a point when there is a turning of the corner, whether we see the total settlement of the election across the pond, whether we see the total solution to Brexit, whether we see COVID vaccinations coming in. Those triggers will lift the market very sharply. Do not be fooled into thinking, simply because it's a dark time now, that there isn't light at the end of the tunnel. There is, and you don't need to miss it if you consider that maxim of it's time versus timing that will make you money in the markets. This is not a time to run for cover.
So are you saying, Bill, is this a good time to invest?
I think selectively it is. I think if you are now thinking of making an investment for the medium to long-term future, the next 5 or 7 years out, the value in the market is very good. I think you won't be disappointed in 5 or 7 years' time. You will suffer gyrations in the interim. That's the name of the markets. That's the way, it's the nature of the markets. That's the way they work. I think this could be a very interesting time. If you look back on investments made now at the back end of 2020, at the back end of 2025, in 5 years' time, you'll be looking at substantial improvements in your wealth simply because you took the right step at the right time. You know, we have huge amounts of fiscal stimulus going on, which is injecting funds into the market. Of course, that is a cost that's got to be repaid at some time. The Federal Reserve Bank have forecast low inflation rates until at least 2023. That means businesses will benefit from low interest and low inflation. We've got European growth recovery to look forward to. Trade, I think, although it's been debated between the US and China, I think that is one trade deal that will still remain intact in the future, whatever happens. And I think that you're looking at a global recovery from a very sharp, short shock of decline over the period of 2020 generally.
How can people benefit from future market upswings, but without taking on too much risk?
I think the answer, Howard, with greatest of respect, and I mean no disrespect to anybody, is don't be greedy. You know, when you're looking at what you might now want to invest in, don't go rushing at those things that you think are going to make you money in the short term. Set your balanced portfolio out, knowing that if there are gyrations, you've got some defence against those gyrations by virtue of having bonds, cash, and things like real estate even that may hold up their value when equity markets are in a volatile period. You want to get that balance right. I think the greatest skill that we have at Blevins Franks is the 40-odd years experience of dealing with retired expatriates whose wealth has been made and cannot, and they don't want to make it again, cannot be made again. And our skill is in formulating, with the client's input and his expectations, his aspirations, formulating a portfolio of assets that match his tolerance to risk and his expectation of returns over the medium to longer term in what is an extremely efficient tax environment, so that if you are making good money, you aren't giving too much of that away to the tax man. You're only giving unto Caesar what is due to Caesar. So I think the art of getting it right is to take expert advice. If you're already an existing investor, it doesn't hurt to talk about what you might want to do now if you have any uncertainty in your mind. If you've got free capital, this might be the right time to think about it, starting to invest that into a variety of different investment assets. But the issue is talk to somebody, talk to an independent financial advisor with tax planning skills, wealth management skills, and who's been doing the job for British expatriates for over 45 years. That is the strength of Blevins Franks.
Your good sales. And, of course, the website is the best place to look for people who don't know a lot about your company, Bill.
Sure. I mean, I think it's a great introduction to the business. It's a very complete website. It has videos on there for you to consider in terms of investment services. It has books that you might wish to purchase so that you understand the technical aspects of living in Spain. And it also has articles on there that will give you greater confidence, if you like, in the skills and expertise of Blevins Franks. It's a good place to start, www.blevinsfranks.com. And once you've got there, local offices scattered around the popular areas of Spain, make contact with the office, discuss with them what your concerns are. I'm sure that it will be worth your while.
Many thanks, Bill. We'll chat again at the same time next week.
Thanks a lot, Howard. Have a great week.
Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.